Hello and welcome to CJ Evolution, the podcast dedicated to helping criminal justice professionals like you. Now here's your host, fellow CJ Evolutionary, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello everybody, welcome back. CJ Evolution episode 88. I am very excited to have the next guest on. He's Dr. Hans Finzel. He's a successful author, speaker, and trusted authority in the field of leadership. If you don't know who he is, Google him because he's synonymous with leadership. For 20 years, he's led an international nonprofit, World Venture, serving in over 65 countries. Today, he serves as president of HD Leaders. He speaks and writes on practical leadership principles from the real world, not just classrooms. Sir, welcome. Thank you for being on CJ Evolution.
Thanks, Pat. Great being on the show with you.
You know, again, for those of you who don't know, Hans, you got four books out there now, right?
No, this is my 10th book.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry.
This is number 10, so you got to keep up.
I got to keep up. Yeah, I was looking at your website today, and I was looking at all these books, and but 10 books, my God, this is...
Yeah, I just put like five on my website.
Oh, okay, that's what I was going off of.
Go to Amazon and type in my name, Hans Finzel, they all come up there, so, yeah.
Well, I just got done reading Top 10 Ways to Be a Great Leader. Amazing book, sir. Amazing.
Thank you.
Amazing book. And leadership is, you know, as you know, and people in criminal justice, there's leaders all over the field, and I'm so glad, you know, you decided to come on the show today. What drove you to write books and... What drove you to do what you're doing right now? I know you probably get that question all the time, but
bad leaders working for terrible bosses.
Yeah,
that's what drove me. When I speak in audiences on leadership, I always ask the question: how many of you have worked for a terrible boss? Just suppose how many people raise their hand.
Oh, just a ton of them.
Yeah, just about everybody. And I was there by very idealistic. I went to college, went to grad school, went out into my career, and I got very disillusioned because I worked for a visionary who was very gifted and very talented, but he was a control freak. He was actually a terrible leader, and it just frustrated me so much. And I eventually quit that job and left. It was very painful. And I thought, if I ever become a leader, I want to be the kind of person that inspires people, empowers people. You know, that doesn't just frustrate the heck out of people. So next thing you know, I was appointed a CEO of a big international nonprofit, which I ran for 20 years. So I started writing books because I just started studying leadership. And I got my doctorate in the field. And it was really an interest in helping leaders do a better job, because there are so many people that suffer under poor leadership that don't even know they're not good leaders. So I've just got a real passion to help leaders take their leadership to the next level.
But Hans, why do so many people get put in roles in organizations, leadership roles, when I shouldn't say so many, but some people...
No, it's true.
A lot that shouldn't be in the roles.
Yeah, I'll tell you exactly why.
That they're in.
Skill, accomplishment. You ever heard of the Peter Principle?
Yes, I have, yeah.
You know, people are really good at the skill, whether it's a police officer or you name it, a teacher. They're so good at their technical skill and they're smart and they're gifted that people think, oh, well, let's make them the boss. And then kaboom, that person has no business being the boss because they got there because of their technical know-how.
Or it's connections or political reasons or
Or
bureaucracy.
How many of us look at people in leadership and say, why in the world is that person the leader?
Oh, exactly.
Or the boss or the mayor of the city. I mean, you just see these disasters and you think, how did this happen?
So when you go into organizations, sir, and you talk and you give lectures and you do, what are you telling people in lectures and your talks, you know, about, you know, leadership and things like that?
Well, the biggest thing I tell people is, if you're in leadership, study it and learn how to be a better leader. If you were a doctor, you'd have to keep, you know, studying how to, you know, improve your medical skills. If you're a teacher. And I think leaders sometimes don't realize they should be improving their skills. So my message is, if you're in leadership, work it out. Improve your skill. Read. That's why I write books on leadership, so I can offer help to the average rank and file manager, boss, leader. So my message is, the L in leadership stands for listen and learn. And the best leaders are those who listen and they just keep on learning. So that's my biggest advice, is just keep learning to be a better leader. Listening to this podcast, reading books, listening to other podcasts, do whatever you can to improve that skill. You know, go take some courses if you have to.
Now, how many, you know, maybe this is too broad of a question, but when you're talking about organizations, even individually, you know, trying to figure out how to phrase this question. I mean, do you think leadership is lacking in the majority of organizations or individually, or do you think it's only in a few organizations, or what do you think?
I do think it's generally lacking.
Generally lacking, and it doesn't matter what business you're in or anything like that.
It doesn't matter what field. Yesterday I was on a podcast for real estate agents. And this guy was telling me he's like a pro in the real estate world, just the disaster of, again, you're really good at selling houses. The next thing you know, you have a whole team of people on your team helping you sell, you know, houses, and it's a disaster. So I find in every discipline, in every field, there seem to be more bad leaders than good leaders.
God,
and
here,
I'll tell you why, Pat. I'll tell you why. Because I believe if you do it comes naturally, you won't be a great leader.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we tend to lead as we were led. When I was in high school, I remember one of my first jobs, I was a truck driver for this refrigeration supply company in my hometown of Huntsville, Alabama, and my boss was Charlie. And Charlie, his philosophy was only work when the big boss is around. Otherwise, we're going to be playing cards back in the warehouse. Okay, so if we lead as we were led, boy, did I have a great role model. And so if people will replicate bad habits.
That's a good point.
I had a woman that worked for me, and she came from another place in North Carolina, and she said, my last boss, his whole philosophy was lead by intimidation.
Oh, jeez.
It was horrible, but, you know, we lead as we were led. But when I say we do, if we do, it comes naturally, we won't be great leaders, because naturally, I think we're very self-centered and selfish people. You know, you don't have to teach little kids to fight over toys and to be selfish.
That's a
good
point.
We're all basically selfish people. And I think we have to learn as leaders to care about the people we lead. So, and people in America are really tired of self-serving leaders, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, and it's really amazing that you brought up, you know, the fact that there, you know, that there's leaders out there that still probably, you know, and I know from personal experience that leaders that, you know, lead by intimidation or fear, and that is the absolute last thing leaders need to be doing.
That's right, and I've been doing a lot of studies on millennials coming into the workforce, and I'm sure in the criminal justice system, you guys have seen this big time, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the value system of millennials is very different, and their view of leadership is very different. And you may not like it if you're older and you're like, these kids just need to buckle down and get serious and do the work and pay attention and listen up. But they respect leaders that are accessible and vulnerable and that are not top down. I call top down leadership mm-hmm. is the worst kind of leadership, where you just lead by intimidation. You're a control freak, you know, speak when you're spoken to. That's not going to work with the millennial generation. And I think some of what they're telling us is a good thing, that we need to become more mm-hmm. An accessible leader and get out of our ivory tower, out of our corner office.
Exactly. And what advice, sir, would you give to leaders out there? Because it's, you know, it's very hard, especially with adults, to kind of change things sometimes and change their way of thinking. And what advice would you give senior leaders or you don't even have to be a senior leader of an organization, a leader of an organization that is kind of stuck in this old paradigm of, you know, kind of leading with kind of old, you know, this old school mentality, like you said, you know, leading with fear and things like that. I mean, what advice do you give those people? Because it's hard to change people. You know that, sir.
It is. I actually get that question a lot from followers
yeah.
who say, ask me, how can I change my boss?
Yeah.
Because you are perfectly describing my boss. And it's tough.
It's very tough. You know, you can't.
It's very tough to change your boss. But if you're listening to this podcast and you're in leadership, I would say, maybe you need to become a little more self-aware of what kind of a leader you are. The second chapter, you know, my book, Top 10 Ways to Be a Great Leader, I have the acrostic of leadership, and for every one of the 10 chapters is based on one of the letters in the word leadership. And the E in leadership stands for emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you're familiar with that concept.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And we know now that EQ is more important than IQ when it comes to leadership. And EQ is getting in touch with how you're coming across to people with your people skills. And it's learning about your blind spots. And I hate to say it, Pat, but the only way you're going to find that out is ask for some feedback from the troops. How am I coming along? I've got a great question you can ask your team that's kind of – it's not too threatening. One is about listening, you know, because the L in, again, and the L in leadership stands for listen and learn. And so you might want to ask your people, you know, how good of a listener am I? But instead of just an open-ended question like that, I would say, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, how good of a listener do you think I am? And then just be quiet and listen to what they say and try not to get too defensive.
Well, and I think – oh, go ahead, sir. No, go ahead, sir.
I was just going to say the only way – those kind of leaders are going to change is if they are open to change and if they're willing to learn. Again, that's why I say not only listen, but you have to learn, because we live in a very different world today. And 40 years ago, you could bark orders and be in the corner office and be on the executive floor and people followed, you know, because they had to. But that paradigm just doesn't work anymore. And people don't respect leadership that is isolated and insulated from the troops.
Well, and I think that I think part of the problem, sir, is, and you correct me if I'm wrong, is getting a leader to the point, or maybe him or her to the point where they are asking for feedback. Because I think a lot of times, in my experience, when a leader, you know, goes to the troops or whoever in an organization and says, you know, what do you think, how do you think I'm doing this? I think a lot of people view that as, the leaders themselves view that as a sign of weakness, that they can't go to people and say, what do you think I'm doing wrong? Or what do you think I should be doing better? Because that, in their mind, that projects the view of weakness. And I think it projects the view of strength, because look, I don't know everything. I'm a leader in my organization. And if I don't know something, I'll tell people, look, I don't know, but I'll find out. But I don't look at it as an area of weakness, but so many leaders, I think, do. Am I wrong?
You're absolutely right, and it's the old paradigm of leadership. Mm-hmm. I cannot show any weakness.
Yeah, exactly.
And to me, the new paradigm of leadership is vulnerability, and I talk about that in my book. Don't be afraid of vulnerability. Vulnerability just means I'm willing to admit I'm not perfect. And when I make mistakes, I'm going to tell you I make mistakes, and we're all going to grow together, because, you know, none of us are perfect. And by the way, I think, Pat, the best place to get feedback, if you're listening and you're a boss or a leader and you have a team, is annual reviews, because, you know, any good, healthy organization has annual performance reviews. And I always practice that I would make sure in every performance review with people, I would give them good news and bad news. You know, what you're doing great. And I'm a conflict avoider, so I would prefer only to give people good news.
Exactly.
But I learned that I have to also give people corrective news, and here's what you need to work on. And then the last question I would ask just me and that one person is, you know, let's turn this thing around. Let's talk about my leadership and my leading you. Do you have any feedback on how I could be a better supervisor for you? That's a nice open-ended question.
It is. It is. But I don't think a lot of people do. I've never heard a supervisor that was supervising me, either in, because I've spent the majority of my life in a uniform, whether it's the military or law enforcement. That is such good advice. But I've never heard a leader ever ask that to me. Say, okay, they would give me my performance evaluation, but they would never ask, how do you think I'm doing?
Yeah, well, it's coming, and it's sweeping the country now, the whole idea of performance evaluation, 360-degree evaluation.
Yeah, exactly.
Just 2 days ago, I was working with a law firm in South Carolina, and they're doing a 360 evaluation of the head partner in the law firm, and it's first time they're doing it, but more and more people are saying, look, if I'm being evaluated by my performance, what about the boss?
Exactly. I think it's a great question. I mean, come on.
It is. And there's ways to do it without, you know, blowing the place apart, because you do have to be careful that
exactly
a witch hunt or a chance to retribution or whatever, you know. But I'm a big believer that even the person, and that's what happened to me. I was a CEO, and for many years I was never evaluated, even by my board. They love me. They just, you're doing a great job. But then I began to ask for evaluation, and then the team began to say, hey, I think Hans ought to be evaluated too. We're all being evaluated. By the way, Pat, that's part of the shrinking power distance today between leaders and followers.
Yeah.
You know, 20, 30 years ago, people wouldn't have even dared to suggest that. But I'll tell you, millennials, they're all over this.
Yeah, exactly. They want it.
They do, and they want the boss to have it too.
Now, you talk, Dr. Finzel, about, you know, some basic ingredients. So much of what you're talking about is effective communication. Communication in law enforcement, criminals, it doesn't matter what you do. So much of what we do every day comes down to effective communication. Can you give us some basics for effective communication?
Yeah, the E in leadership stands for
exactly, yes.
And I think leaders ought to over-communicate by a factor of 10.
Mm-hmm.
We always think we're communicating more than we really are, and we also are under the mistaken impression people know by process of osmosis what we're thinking. Have you ever seen that?
Oh, yeah. You know, people will know. They'll just assume that.
Of course they know. Or I said it once. You mean everybody didn't pick it up?
Exactly.
I was talking to a leader the other day who has a big organization, and the way he communicates that organization is through a weekly email. Okay? Now, this is a distributed organization. It's not all in one city. And he was crushed when I gave him his open rate on his emails. And, you know, like if you use MailChimp or Constant Contact, you can check your open rate, how many people actually opened the email and read it. And it was like 13%.
He was shocked.
He was like, what?
People aren't reading my emails.
Those insubordinate people, what do you mean they're not reading my beautiful email updates? And so the moral of that story is, you know, we're all so inundated with so much information that
exactly
one channel of communication is not enough. You've got to talk. You've got to write. You've got to, if you have a blog or a secret Facebook group, or there's got to be a multiple ways to stay in touch with the troops. But people want to know what's going on. And leaders' responsibility is to over-communicate. And the more people know what's going on, the more they're on board and the more they trust the leader. But, you know, people hate secrecy.
That's such a good point. I mean, in my organization, there's routine closed-door meeting. It seems like every other day there's some, you know, the leadership is behind closed doors.
And guess what? Everybody's asking.
Exactly.
What are they talking about?
What are they talking about? Are they talking about me? Are they talking about you? Or
what's happening?
Exactly.
And they always think negative. And then they also feel unimportant because they're not in that room. And so if the boss on a regular occasion will just – what I did is I had once a month where I had kind of a president's address, and I worked in an office, and most of my people were right there in the office, and I would tell everybody once a month, get them all together like for a staff meeting, kind of here's what's going on. I'll talk to them for 15 minutes. They say, all right, what questions do you have? Well, tell me what was going on in that secret meeting the other
day. Well, I can't talk to you about it. It's secret. Well, the thing that cracks me up is that, you know, I'm not on patrol anymore. I do other things in my organization and training and stuff like that. And it cracks me up to this day where the guy kind of 5 feet away from me is sending me emails instead of just coming and just talking to me in person.
Okay, well, I have to admit, like, my wife and I are at home. We're empty nesters now. You know? We're going to God. So I'm downstairs cooking dinner, and then I text her.
Well, I do. Okay. Upstairs,
come on, dinner's ready. Don't you do that?
What,
you know.
what do you think?
Why yell across the house when you can just text your wife?
You just say, yeah, it's a good point. Fair point. What do you think about feedback? Why do some of us don't accept feedback well? I mean, how do we change this? Because I really subscribe to what you're saying, Doctor. You know, is we have to be able to ask people those tough questions. You know, what am I doing wrong? You know, how can I communicate better? Whatever it is. I mean, how can we change this?
Yeah, people who are afraid of feedback are insecure. But, you know, basically it's an insecurity. I'm not comfortable in my skin. I'm afraid of being criticized. I don't want to be criticized. And so it's a fear.
Yeah, exactly.
People who don't want to, and you just got to get over that fear. And it goes back to me to this vulnerability thing. I don't know if you're familiar with Brené Brown's writings.
Yes, I am. Yes.
Vulnerability. That's the power of vulnerability. It's exactly what we're talking about. If you're willing to admit you're not perfect, then you're ready to get some feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Because vulnerability, I found that people's respect for me went up the more vulnerable I was. And the more I tried to be closed in a shell and not accept feedback and pretend I'm perfect or project this, you know, I got my act together, then people don't trust you as much, respect you as much. So I think it's a fear. People fear being criticized. It goes back to probably their childhood and how they grew up, you know.
But you don't want to be – there has to be some good balance there, right, Doctor? I mean, you don't want to be too vulnerable. But you want to be vulnerable enough where you can accept, you know, you can accept the criticism, you can accept, you know, the feedback, but you don't want to be overly vulnerable, if that makes sense.
I totally agree with that. You have to have some boundaries.
Exactly. Now, you talk a lot about servant leadership and slave leadership. Can you talk about that and kind of describe that?
I love this topic, servant leadership. It was first coined by a guy by the name of Robert Greenleaf back in 1970 when he wrote a book called Servant Leadership. And what is it? Here's my definition. When the leader cares more about the good of the team than his or her own enrichment. Mm-hmm. Let's just break that down for a minute. When the leader cares more about the good of the team than his or her own enrichment. That's servant leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the opposite of top-down leadership when it's all about me. Servant leadership is about we. And Zig Ziglar famously said years ago, if you help people get what they want, you'll get what you want. And that really is being a servant leader, where you're helping other people be successful. It's not just about me. It's about us. It's about the team.
Mm-hmm.
So slave leadership, I contrast that because some people go too far with this idea of servant leadership and they think, well, okay, that means I have to serve everybody 24/7. Whatever people want me to do, I'm going to do because I'm supposed to be serving them. No, that's slave leadership. You don't want to carry them on your back and do all their work for them. And you don't want to be a slave of the tyranny of the urgent, just constantly having everybody else set your agenda. To me, it's an attitude of the heart and the mind that everybody's as important as I am. I happen to be the boss. I'm the leader, but that doesn't mean I'm the most important person in this operation. We're all important, and everybody's valuable. And my role is to help everybody be successful. So that's servant leadership to me, when the leader cares more about the good of the team than his or her own enrichment.
That is so. Let me ask you this, Doctor. What has been one of your greatest leadership failures? I mean, you're an expert. You're a guru on leadership. And what has been one of your failures?
And I think the reason I might be an expert is because I've made more failures than everybody else put together. I think that early in my career, I suffered. Well, not even earlier, but I'm a type A personality.
Oh, like me.
I'm pure German. I'm driven. I'm task-oriented, and I run over people. And I had a crisis where my team basically had a rebellion and said they weren't going to follow me anymore. This happened a number of years ago, and I began to dig down to what's going on here. Says, well, you know, you don't care about us. It's just about you and your agenda, and you run all over us, you know, trying to get your agenda done. You don't care about us. So that was a huge failure. And they basically said, we don't want to follow you anymore. That really hurt.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was really good. But, talk about a huge blind spot. I just did not realize how I was coming across. And sadly, it had to come to a crisis before I – because at that time, I was not willing to ask them, how am I coming across?
Mm-hmm.
And they basically ganged up against me.
Wow.
And then I found out, okay.
And then it was too late, yeah.
And I've got to get over this arrogance. In fact, the last chapter of my book, the P in the top 10 ways to be a great leader, the P is for the power of humility.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned a valuable lesson about humble leadership. And humility is not being so arrogant and driven that you run all over everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, I believe leadership's about people work and helping people and people skills.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, and so much I tell new officers too, and new troops that I train, because we're in a position of power and authority. But to your point, sir, about, you know, the last, you know, number 10 is P is for the power of humility. It's so important. We have to be humble. I'm not saying you give up your officer safety or anything like that, but you have to be humble. You that is so important these days, and I think so many people don't have it.
And humility is not weakness.
No, of course not. I've never viewed it. Maybe some people do.
Some people are listening to us thinking, that's a bunch of crap, you know. That's
yeah.
I can't show weakness. I'm a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I think humility is an attitude. And I don't know if you know the book Good to Great.
John Maxwell.
Book. I love that book.
Oh, I love John Maxwell. I mean, he's...
Yeah, well, and Jim Collins...
Jim Collins. I was thinking of John Maxwell.
He studied all these companies and found out what made the great companies great. Mm-hmm. You know, like Walmart versus Kmart or FedEx versus DHL. And he found that one of the characteristics was that they had level 5 leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And level 5 leadership is humble. It's mm-hmm. humility bathed in strength. And I love the way he talks about that. I quote him in that last chapter, because that's what it is. It's humility. It's strength bathed in humility is what it really is. And he proved at a real secular level in corporate America that there's a lot of powerful humility at the very top of some of our greatest companies.
But why is it so hard for, you know, getting into, why is it so hard for a lot of leaders to accept this? Why is it so hard for them to say, look, I got to, you know, using, like you said, the 10 steps, like, you know, integrity, you talk about integrity, servant attitude, you know, humility. Why is it so hard for some leaders to grasp these concepts? I mean, I know it's ego and other things, but geez, I mean, come on.
Culturally, top-down leadership is the norm that... Mm-hmm. You know, we all grew up with. So we're fighting against the norm. Again, if you do it, it comes naturally, you'll be a selfish leader. And I've lectured all over the world. I've been to over 100 countries. And, you know, the problem, Pat, is actually worse in Asia and Africa. And talk about dictatorships and top-down leaderships and iron-fisted leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Gosh, I think we've made more progress here in America at understanding a better style of leadership, you know, participatory management and leadership with a team and leadership by a team. But I think it goes against culture and against human nature. And that's probably why it's so hard for some people to get it. But then that's why I just keep saying, learn. If you're mm-hmm. in leadership, learn, grow, expose yourself to this stuff.
And surround yourself with people like you, Doctor. I mean, listen to your podcast, read your books. I mean, surround yourself. You've heard the average of the 5 people you surround yourself with. Surround yourself with those positive influences, right? I mean, those
Absolutely.
Good leaders. Don't surround yourself with the negatives.
Yeah, and if you think about back to your career, who were the – I did one podcast on the 10 mentors of my life, and
mm-hmm.
I just started thinking, who are the people that have made me who I am today, who really believed in me and mm-hmm. helped me along my journey? And, you know, when I thought about it, they were all really humble people. They were powerful, strong, gifted people, but they did have a common thread of humility.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, kind of a broad question, what makes great leaders great, sir?
Wow.
What do you think makes great? I mean, obviously, you know, the communication, the humility, any other things.
Well, you're asking what is the key to great leadership.
Yeah, what is the key?
There is no simple answer to that, Pat.
Yeah.
I would say the most important trait, if I had to pick one, would be humility.
Okay.
But I chafe against people who try to say, hey, this is the key. If you do this, you'll be a great leader. It's a complicated thing. When I was doing my doctorate, I found 350 different definitions of leadership.
Sure. No one set definition. There's all kinds of definitions out there.
My definition is one word, influence. Leadership is influencing other people for good or for bad, you know, having an effect on other people. But it's a complicated field to say, hey, this is the key. But I do think the reason I finished the book on the issue of the power of humility, I think that it, in fact, wraps right back up to my first chapter, the L in leadership is to listen and learn. If you're not humble, you won't listen and learn. So see how they tie together?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, what do you think, sir, about leaders? Are they born or are they made? Because there's been questions over, you know, I mean, can you make a leader, or are they just born? Genetically, they have it, and some other people, you know, some people don't.
I love the question. I get it everywhere. I was in China not long ago, and the leaders over there, that was the first question they asked me. Are leaders born or are they made? And the answer is yes. Absolutely yes.
Yeah, okay.
They are born and they are made. And sometimes the best leaders are not naturally born leaders, okay? Like I met Mother Teresa in 1994 in Calcutta, India, one of the greatest people I've ever met. She wasn't even 5 feet tall.
Wow.
She would not be what people would say had the characteristics of a born leader. But you know what she had? Passion.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a burden for people who were suffering. She won a Nobel Prize for her passion. And if you say leadership is influence, she was a huge leader. But
of
I
course.
Think she learned leadership. She wasn't born with natural endowment. You know, I'm kind of a born leader. When I was a kid, I was a leader in the neighborhood. When I was a Boy Scout, I was the head of the troop. When I had a band in high school, I was the leader of the band. So I know what it means to have kind of natural leadership abilities, but I really think it's more important what you learn than what you're naturally endowed with. And some of the most powerful leaders on planet Earth and in history haven't necessarily been, quote, born leaders.
Mm-hmm. But do you think that they had that just innate ability, though? Like you said, I mean, it was kind of in you when you were young to kind of lead, to take charge.
But it wasn't in Mother Teresa, and it wasn't in a lot of people. I think sometimes it's more, you know, like some people think a leader has to be a visionary.
Mm-hmm.
But not all leaders are visionaries. To me, it's about passion. And if you have enough passion around whatever it is you're doing, oftentimes you'll rise into leadership because of your passion, because you want to make a difference. And then other people will say, wow, well, you should be our leader because you just have such a passion for this, and you got a lot of great ideas.
Oh, jeez. Well, sir, if people want to reach out to you, sir, how do they do that?
All I got to do is figure out how to spell my name. Get that worked out. HansFinzel.com. HANS, F like Frank, INZ like zebra, EL. HansFinzel.com. That's the one-stop shop to find all my stuff, my podcasts, my books, my consulting services, all this other stuff. But yeah, HansFinzel.com.
And you're on YouTube. They can check out your...
I have a YouTube channel, a Facebook page. I got all the usual suspects. Yep.
Well, sir, it has been a pleasure. I could talk to you all day, and I'm sure my listeners are going to enjoy this podcast. Any other final words of wisdom before we end this show?
Yeah, I would just say, again, if you're listening to this and you struggle as a leader, or maybe you struggle under a leader, maybe you'll get a chance later on to go into leadership. You know, and if you do, just remember, humility is so important. Don't think more highly of yourself than you should, because it's really about the teamwork. The teamwork really does make it all come together. Again, I'll finish with that definition of servant leadership. When the leader cares more about the good of the team than his or her own enrichment, that's the leader of the future. So I would encourage you to be that kind of a leader.
Well, sir, I appreciate it so much. Thank you, doctor, for coming on the show. Just
such
great advice, and you're welcome back anytime, sir.
Thanks, Pat.
All right, you take care of yourself, sir.
Okay, you too.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast, and reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.